Page 71, State Capitalism, Its Possibilities and Limitations by Friedrich Pollock. In this essay, first published in Studies in Philosophy and Social Sciences, Volume Roman 9, 1941, Pollock presents us with a carefully worked-out economic model of state capitalism as a post-capitalist social formation. The essay derives its crucial insight from several contexts: Pollock's own study of Soviet planning, Keynesian theory, and the debate about socialist planning in the 1930s, the claim of the end of the primacy of the economic, and the rejection of political economy as the main context of critical theory are his most dramatic conclusions. Nevertheless, the reader should notice that Pollock is not postulating a stable and impenetrable society in the manner of the latter totalitarianism thesis. Instead, he searches with some limited success for the possibility of a political crisis theory. Nothing essentially new is intended in this article. Every thought formulated here has found its expression elsewhere. Our aim is to bring widely scattered and often conflicting ideas into a somewhat consistent summary, which may form the starting point for a discussion of the workability of state capitalism. In regard to the method of this study, the following points ought to be emphasized. Whether such a thing as state capitalism exists or can exist is open to serious doubt. It refers here to a model, footnote 1, text, that can be constructed from elements long visible in Europe and to a certain degree even in America. Page 72. Social and economic developments in Europe since the end of the First World War are interpreted as transitional processes transforming private capitalism into state capitalism. The closest approach to the totalitarian form of the latter has been made in National Socialist Germany. Theoretically, the totalitarian form of state capitalism is not the only possible result of the present process of transformation. It is easier, however, to construct a model for it than for the democratic form of state capitalism to which our experience gives us few clues. One of our basic assumptions is that 19th century free trade and free enterprise are on the way out. Their restoration is doomed for similar reasons as was the attempt to restore feudalism in post-Napoleonic France. The totalitarian form of state capitalism is a deadly menace to all values of Western civilization. Those who want to maintain these values must fully understand the possibilities and limitations of the aggressor of their resistance to them to be met with success. Furthermore, they must be able to show in what way the democratic values can be maintained under the changing conditions. If our assumption of the approaching end of the era of private capitalism is correct, the most gallant fight to restore it can only lead to a waste of energy and eventually serve as a trailblazer for totalitarianism. The concept state capitalism. In the rapid growing literature on the coming social order, the word state capitalism is eschewed by most authors and other words stands in its place. State organized private property, monopoly capitalism, managerial society, administrative capitalism, bureaucratic collectivism, totalitarian state economy, status capitalism, neo-mercantilism, economy of force, state socialism are a very few incomplete set of labels used to identify the same phenomenon. The word state capitalism so runs the argument, if possibly misleading insofar as it could be understood to denote a society wherein the state is the sole owner of all capital. And this is not necessarily meant by those who use it. Nevertheless, it indicates four items better than do all other suggested terms that state capitalism is the successor of private capitalism, that the state assumes important functions of the private capitalist, that profit interests still play a significant role, and that it is not socialism. We define state capitalism in its two most typical varieties. It's totalitarian in its democratic form as a social order different on the following points from private capitalism from which it stems historically. 1. The market is deposed from its controlling function to coordinate production and distribution. Page 73. This function has been taken over by a system of direct control. Freedom of trade, enterprise, and labor are subject to governmental interference of such a degree that they are practically abolished. With the autonomous market, the so-called economic law disappears. 2. These controls are vested in the state, which use a combination of old and new devices, including a pseudo-market, for regulating and expanding production and coordinating it with consumption. Full employment of all resources, footnote 2, text, is claimed as the main achievement in the economic field. The state transgresses all the limits drawn for peacetime state activities. Under the totalitarian form of state capitalism, the state is the power instrument of a new ruling group, which has resulted from the merger of the most powerful vested interests, the top-ranking personnel in industrial and business management, the higher strata of the state bureaucracy, including the military, and the leading figures of the victorious party's bureaucracy. Everybody who does not belong to this group is a mere object of domination. Under a democratic form of state capitalism, the state has the same controlling functions, but it's itself controlled by the people. It is based on constitution which prevent the bureaucracy from transforming its administrative position into an instrument of power and thus laying the basis for trans-shaping the democratic system into a totalitarian one. The heritage of the market system. We start from the assumption that the hour of state capitalism approaches when the market economy becomes an utterly inadequate instrument for utilizing the available resources. The medium-sized private enterprise and free trade, the basis for the gigantic development of men's productive forces in the 19th century, are being gradually destroyed by the offspring of liberalism, private monopolies, and government interference. Concentration of economic activities in giant enterprises, with its consequences of rigid prices, self-financing, and ever-growing concentration, government control of the credit system and foreign trade, quasi-monopoly positions of trade unions with the ensuing rigidity of the labor market, large-scale unemployment of labor and capital and enormous government expenses to care for the unemployed are as many symptoms for the decline of the market system. They became characteristic in various degrees for all industrialized countries after the First World War. Footnote 3, text. Page 74. The materials collected recently by various government agencies demonstrate how far a similar development has gone in the United States. The disturbances of the market mechanism caused by monopoly have been accentuated by the technical resolution in contemporary farming. A shattering dislocation of the world market since the First World War has blocked the channels of export, which were instrumental in overcoming market difficulties during the 19th century. The danger involved in this situation has been recognized, and great efforts are being made to solve the problem of creating full employment while freeing the American market system from the forces which strangle it. analogous developments may reach a point where no measure short of a reorganization of the economic system can prevent the complete disintegration of the social structure. Such a reorganization might take place by a long succession of stopgap measures, many of them contradicting each other without a preconceived plan and often very much against the original intention of their authors. Theoretically, it is possible to construct an integrated model of the new organization, which might replace the outworn system, with a promise of achieving two goals, to guarantee full employment and to maintain the basic elements of the old social structure. If the market system is to be replaced by another organizational form, the new system must perform certain functions which are necessarily connected with the division of labor. In broadest terms, these necessary functions fall into three groups: coordination of needs and resources, direction of production and distribution, implying 1. A way of defining the needs of society in terms of consumer goods, reproduction of plant, machinery and raw materials, and expansion. Footnote 5. Text. 2. Allocations of all available resources in such manner that full employment and utmost satisfaction of the recognized needs are attained. 3. Coordination and control of all productive processes in order to obtain best performance. And 4. Distribution of the social product. The basic weakness of the market system in performing the necessary functions have been discussed again and again, as its waste and inefficiency increasingly overbalanced its earlier achievements. Criticism was voiced mainly against the shortcomings of the price mechanism in directing production, the contradictory performance of the profit motive, which obstructs the use of the available resources, and the murderous mechanics of coordinating the disequilibrated economy, that is, the business cycles with their cumulative processes of destruction. Page 75. But while before the First World War the market mechanism was still workable, even if it was always far from performing in practice what it was supposed to do theoretically, the intrusion of monopolies with their rigid price gradually caused the breakdown of the market system in an ever-growing sphere. A new set of rules. State capitalism replaces the methods of the market by a new set of rules based upon a combination of all the new means. 1. A general plan gives the direction for production, consumption, saving, and investment. The introduction of the principle of planning into the economic process means that a plan is to be constructed for achieving on a national scale certain chosen ends with all available resources. It does not necessarily imply that all details are planned in advance, or that no freedom of choice is all is given to the consumer. But it contrasts sharply to the market system, inasmuch as the final world and that needs shall be satisfied and how is not left to the anonymous and unreliable pull of the market, carried through post festum, but to a conscious decision on ends and means, at least in a broad outline and before production starts. The discussion on planning has become to a point where it seems as if the arguments raised against the technical workability of such a general plan can be refuted. Footnote 6. Text. The genuine problem of a planned society does not lie in its economic but in the political sphere, in the principles to be applied in deciding what needs shall be have preference, how much time shall be spent for work, how much of the social product shall be consumed, and how much used for expansion, and so on. Obviously, such decisions cannot be completely arbitrary, but are to be wide degree dependent upon the available resources. 2. Prices are not no longer allowed to behave as masters of the economic process, but are administered in all important sections of it. That follows from the principle of planning and means that in favor of a planned economy, the market is deprived of its main function. It does not mean that prices cannot exist any longer, but that if they do, they have thoroughly changed their character. Nothing may seem on the surface to have changed. Prices are quoted and goods and services paid for in money. The rise and fall of single prices may be quite common, but the relations between prices and cost of production on the one side and demand and supply on the other, while strictly interconnected in their totality, become disconnected in such cases where they tend to interfere with the general plan. Page 76.